Third and four for the Eagles here. Murphy and shotgun. Here's the snap. He rolls left. He throws.
WZBC Sports.
Hello and welcome to Season 2, Episode 3 of the WZBC Sports Podcasts. I am Kyle Maslin, here with my friend and colleague who I broadcasted the Notre Dame game, the Holy War, with this past weekend, Sam Parsons. Sam, how are you doing this evening?
I'm great. I'm glad to be here, Kyle. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. So, as I had said, we were on the broadcast for Notre Dame this past weekend, which was really a tale of two halves. So, in the first half, when it was a 14-10 score going into halftime. It was a very competitive back-and-forth game. What did you see as the positives and maybe a couple negatives from that first half?
Well, from the first half, the obvious positive is just that we made it a game. You know, there were a lot of people coming into this game that were anticipating a blowout. Vegas had the line at 14.5 in favor of Notre Dame, and to see us down by four was definitely nice to see us playing such a talented team competitively after last season, in which when we played talented teams we would lose 49-0 or 56-10, whatever. It was good to see us playing Notre Dame well and playing competitively, and they were clearly just a motivated bunch of kids out there trying to beat Notre Dame. One of the things that really caught my attention that a lot of people I feel like aren't really talking about in reference to the game was at the end of the first half when we had the ball, Boston College had the ball with about 20-30 seconds left and two timeouts on Notre Dame's 40-yard line or so. Really a play away from a solid field goal opportunity to make it a one-point game, but we run the clock out and take and go into the half with just a four-point deficit. But I just feel like it would have been so much nicer to go into the half as a one-point deficit rather than a four-point deficit, given the fact that you're going to give Notre Dame the ball to start the second half. But all in all, first half, I did feel, though, was a positive half for the Eagles.
I agree. There were a lot of positives in the half, particularly the play of Anthony Brown, who had a really good comeback game after struggling during Wake Forest. And the postgame press conference, Steve Addazio addressed what you just mentioned, Ed, before halftime. And his explanation, whether you agree with it or not, was he wanted to protect the psyche of Anthony Brown, who, as we said, had a really nice half. I think it was 8 of 10 or 10 of 12 for a little over 100 yards and a touchdown. And he was worried that there was a lot more possibility for a negative play, a strip sack, or a pick, than positive plays that would result in points. So I thought it was better for him and the psyche of his young redshirt freshman quarterback to take it into halftime with the four-point game. I agree with a lot of what you said. The positives, they made it a game. It was a great game. It gave me flashbacks to the game freshman year, where it was very close to being an upset as well. And the entire crowd was into it, which I think was one of the biggest benefits, was Dan Shaughnessy of the Boston Globe wrote a big article saying how no one knows that Notre Dame's coming to town. When you were in the stadium, it seemed like there were a lot of people there, and a lot of people were very into the game. So I think it was a really good showing from the BC fan base that's been getting panned a little bit recently, but shows when a big opponent comes to town, when a big game comes to town, and when you play them well, you have guys showing up and showing out. The second half, there was a turn. It was a really close game for a bit in the second half. It got as close to 1 point, 14-13. But then Notre Dame started to kind of run away with it, especially offensively on the ground. They couldn't be stopped for most of the second half. What did you see that changed? And again, maybe give some positives and negatives of that second half of play.
Well, I would say the play that ended up being the biggest turning point was Anthony Brown's first interception. We were down 21-13. And it wasn't necessarily an ill-advised throw. If you remember, it was a go route, and it was kind of a 50-50 ball, but it Anthony Brown just didn't put enough air under it, didn't give his receiver enough chance to go for it. And it was a good play by the Notre Dame defender, but after that, Notre Dame drives down the field, scores a touchdown, forces a BC punt, scores another touchdown. All of a sudden, it's 35-13. And I feel like that's where the game really went south for Boston College. But on a big picture scale, the second half, what I saw was the Boston College defense just getting tired. In the first half, they did a great job, outside of a couple big plays with running back Josh Adams, of really containing the spread option offense. That's why we only gave up 14 points in the first half. They just did a great job. But I really got the feeling that Notre Dame just wore them down, and they ended the game with over 50 carries on the ground. That's just going to make you tired no matter who you are. So it was just poor pursuit angles and fatigue, I feel like, were the biggest factors in the second half for the Boston College defense.
I'll agree with you on the defensive side. They looked exhausted. And one of the big questions that everyone was having postgame was, why wasn't Harold Landry out there? And you brought it up a couple times during the broadcast. When you're looking at the defensive line, you saw a lot of Zach Allen and Wyatt Ray, and not a lot of number seven, Harold Landry. Adazio says he wants to keep him fresh for the end of the game. It's wondering whether or not that is the right response, as Wimbush did not have a lot of pressure on him most of the game. However, I will disagree with you with the single turning point. The pick was a huge game changer. However, I think the tie really turned a little before that. It was 14-13. It was a 4th-and-1 play deep in Notre Dame territory. They were on the 30-35-yard line, if I remember correctly. And it's 4th-and-1. They've been marching down the field. They had just gotten a field goal, stopped Notre Dame, and this was the next drive. They could have really seized a ton of momentum, silenced the Notre Dame crowd, and possibly gone up either 6 or 7 points if they had gone for 2. And on 4th-and-1, they hand the ball to John Hillman, a play that worked a decent amount during the game, but everyone knew it was coming, and Notre Dame was able to stuff them. And after they got that 4th-and-1 stop, that seemed to elevate Notre Dame's spirits, who seemed to be on edge. They were like, oh my God, this could be an upset after we had the fumble recovery the previous Notre Dame offensive possession, or two previous offensive possessions, I should say, for Notre Dame. And it was about 7:30 left in the third quarter, and Notre Dame got the ball, and they marched right down the field. That was the first real drive where that running attack went methodically down, and that was made at 21-13, which started getting compounded over time. And that's what I thought was the big kind of momentum changer that allowed Notre Dame to kind of pull ahead. And as they just got more and more ahead, the stats ended up getting silly near the very end, to quote Steve Adazio and what he said about it. But yeah, that's why I thought the real momentum changed, and Notre Dame never really let off the throttle after that.
Yeah, and a big problem that I had with that play call with the Hillman running the ball on 4th-and-1 was just that the formation was just so conspicuous. You had an I formation with twin tight ends. You're not going to throw the ball out of that formation. You're probably not going to do anything other than an ISO play to Hillman, and that's exactly what they did. Notre Dame read it, like you said. It was very predictable, and I do agree that was definitely a huge play when it comes to how it changed the feeling of the game overall. But still, when you're down by just a touchdown and you throw an interception, after having sustained a few drives before that point, I feel like that was a slightly bigger turning point, but I think that you definitely made a compelling argument there.
So now, as I said, we've now addressed the game in full. Post-game, there were a lot of interviews. Steve Adazio seemed furious in the post-game press conference. He was energetic but mad. He really thought that there was a chance for the upset, and he thought that it kind of slipped through his hands. It was a general feeling that we got from his time in the press conference. And then there were varying opinions after that. Dennis seemed to be motivated and kind of looking forward. Anthony Brown looked positive, and John Hillman looked dejected. I mean, he had a really nice game for a lot of it. He did have a costly fumble near the end. But he was the one guy that didn't have that same fire underneath himself that all the other guys did in the press conference. What would you take out of that?
Well, I think that it's good to see a guy like Dennis looking forward to the next game, because I feel like he had a pretty good game coverage-wise. Him and Cam Moore, they both did a great job shutting down Wimbush's arm. His legs were another story, but that's not necessarily on them. Brown, I'm glad that he was positive, because he did have a pretty good game. Like, he threw one poor interception where he really missed his guy. Other than that, he threw, I think, 40 passes, and a lot of them were good. You know, he's going to miss a few times. He's a freshman. He's a redshirt freshman. It's his third start against Notre Dame. You're not going to expect a perfect game out of him, but you look at the first half, no turnovers, two passing touchdowns. He looked a lot more comfortable out there than he did against last week against Wake Forest. Really looked like he was composed and sure of himself. As for Hilleman, I definitely understand why he was a little dejected, because it looked like BC kind of had a chance to mount a comeback there, because down two touchdowns, you just scored a touchdown, you forced Notre Dame to punt, and then a really good offensive play to start the drive, and then the Hilleman carry, which was, as I said in the broadcast, a very well-designed play, very creative play design that you don't necessarily see out of a Steve Adazio offense, had the first down by a mile, and he just fumbled it when he was tackled. So the fact that he wasn't necessarily in the highest of spirits, I definitely understand that. But as a running back, you have to have a short-term memory, or a convenient memory, rather. You just have to forget the fumble that ever happened and just work on your ball security moving forward.
So now that we've covered basically the entirety of the game from that point, what would your opinion of one of my favorite segments I do when I talk about BC football, the dude of the game?
Well, my dude of the game, I would have to say, was Cameron Moore. Like, I was gushing over him on the broadcast, but he really did a great job. He was, most of the game, he was up against a very talented wide receiver in Equanimee of St. Brown, projected by many to be a day two, possibly day one draft pick in the coming years. And he had one catch all game for 3 yards. Like, that just speaks to an incredible job by the secondary. You could say the whole secondary were a bunch of dudes out there. But Cam Moore particularly stood out to me.
Well, you said the secondary was a bunch of dudes. I want to take a different set of dudes. I want to take the offensive line. There were a lot of question marks coming after Wake Forest about what the offensive line were able to do against a good front seven of Notre Dame. And they ran the ball as well as I'd seen in recent memory. And Anthony Brown had a clean pocket. He only had one sack, which is pretty good for a whole game when you're dropping back 4 times to only have been taken down once. And I don't recall that many hard hits taken other than the one sack where he was actually getting tripped over a fallen lineman. So it wasn't like he really took a hard hit from a free edge rusher. But I don't remember seeing that many free edge rushers getting clean hits on Brown. And there were a lot of running holes, a lot more than I'd seen in recent memory of watching BC football. So the offensive line, especially doing a really good job and replacing John Baker, are my dudes of the game. So now we've covered this entirety. So now a quarter way through the season, BC is 1-2, victory over NIU opening night, 20-23. And then you have the two losses back-to-back, Wake Forest, Notre Dame at home. Next week, Saturday, 3:30, they head to Death Valley for the defending national champions. I believe they're number 2 in the now AP rankings, Clemson. They just beat Auburn and Louisville back-to-back weeks. Did not give up any points to either. Pretty good offense. What do you, as a kind of quick preview of this game, expect from the Eagles and what people can hopefully experience either on ESPN, which I believe the game will be broadcasted on, and obviously on WZBC 90.3 FM Newton when we broadcast the game live from Death Valley?
Great plug right there, Kyle. I think that there's Clemson, obviously, I mean, I hate to say it, but they severely outclass us when it comes to talent. And being the number 2 team in the country against Boston College, it's hard to expect a good game, especially with them playing at home. But one thing that I will say that can sort of lend hope to possibly witnessing a challenge by BC out there is the fact that, as you said, they beat Auburn and Louisville back-to-back weeks. They thrashed Louisville and Lamar Jackson, which nobody expected. I know a lot of people actually expected Louisville to win. I mean, I think Clemson was favored, but playing against the reigning Heisman Trophy winner, who was having an excellent campaign up to that point, a lot of people expected Louisville to, if not win, make it a very great game, especially after last year. It was a great game between those two teams. And coming off of a win like that and playing against the Boston College Eagles at home, they're probably going to glaze over them and not expect a whole lot of a challenge and just expect us to kind of go out there and roll over. So if Boston College can bring their A game and catch the Clemson Tigers off guard, I think that that could lend for an entertaining matchup.
I agree. There are a lot of factors that can contribute to the trap game, as they just played back-to-back ranked opponents, Auburn and Louisville, who I believe at the time in playing were fifth. Auburn was 15 when they played, and I believe Louisville was 14 last week when they played at Clemson. And then they have us, and then next week they have another top 15 team, Virginia Tech, who had another excellent campaign with their new quarterback, Josh Jackson, leading the charge for the Hokies. And if Clemson, Clemson might be trap game proof because Dabo Sweeney might be that good of a coach and the team might just be that talented. But this could very well work up its way as a trap game, given the fact that we are sandwiched in the middle of three ranked opponents, two of which are in conference and are competing with Clemson for the opportunity to represent our division in the ACC championship game. We will hold off our game picks because those will come out later this week in an article on WZBCSports.com. So if you want to see the game picks of us and the entire board, you can check there. Any final thoughts from Notre Dame or as a short preview for Clemson, Sam?
Well, 40 minutes of good football, 20 minutes of bad football. Take with that what you may. It was a mixed bag, but I think that there is reason to be excited for the rest of the season as a Boston College football fan.
I think that was probably the best way to summarize the game. 40 minutes of really good football, competitive football, and then 20 minutes that just didn't match up. Unfortunately, made the final score very lopsided. Well, for over half of the game, it was a very, very good contest. Hopefully that as the players mature throughout the year, that they can put together a good 60 minutes. And I think if they can put together a whole game, that they could upset a player or two. And they look like it's 1-2. You'd love to be 2-1 at this point in the year. But they still are in good shape for hopefully getting a bowl bid. As you know, we need 6 wins as we did last year to make a bowl. So hopefully they can still get to that magical 6-6 number to get into postseason play. And hopefully we can see the development of the young players, especially Anthony Brown.
Indeed. In a school that has just been so starved for offensive talent the last few years, it's been several years since we've even had a 2,000-yard passer. I think that a redshirt freshman, Anthony Brown, who has had some very bright spots to his early campaign, I think really lends hope that we could finally see somebody break that barrier in the coming years for the Boston College football program.
I agree, and that will wrap it up for this episode. I would like to thank everybody for tuning in. It is, once again, Season 2, Episode 3 of the WZBC Sports Podcasts. You can find them on iTunes or on our website at WZBCSports.com, and on iTunes we are listed as WZBC Sports. And as for all games, for the Boston College's season, we will be having game picks up on our website, so please tune in for that. And for post-game analysis after football games and many of our home games and probably some of our away games as well. So just keep in touch with what we're putting out there. And again, thank everyone for listening to this WZB podcast. For Sam Parsons, I am Kyle Maslin.
Santini, make a nice little pass over to Sanford. Sanford gives it to Tuck. Tuck with a shot! Oh! Tuck scores! Eagles win! The Eagles have won the 2016 Bean Bunt Championship!
Catch all the excitement of Boston College athletics right here on WZBC Newton 90.3 FM. As BC's only student radio broadcasting organization, WZBC Sports brings a different viewpoint of college athletics to the table. Our student commentators know the campus, student athlete culture, and latest beat on the teams like no other media outlet, thanks to our dedicated coverage of Boston College sports. Check out our broadcast or weekly talk show schedules at www.wzbcsports.com and get a refreshing take on sporting events at the Heights and beyond.